prophets would have been the most worthy of survival and the most content with the divine destiny. However, Allah created the world for extinction. Hence, its new makes are antiquated, its graces are fleeting, its delight is sullen. Its situation is located on a mountain slope, and its house is transient. Hence, try to avail yourselves of some provisions, for the best of provisions is piety. And fear Allah so that you may reach felicity. O people, Allah the Exalted created the world and has made it an abode of devastation and abasement that changes its inhabitants from one state to another. Hence, the deceived person is one who has been fooled by the world, and the evildoer is one whom it has deceived. Therefore, be wary not to be deceived by this world, for it shatters the hopes of anybody who has tended to it, and makes hopeless anybody who has had a hope in it.
السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائي عليك.
Dear audience, now let's listen to some parts of Ziyara An-Nahiya Al-Muqaddasa. Stay tuned.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. السلام على الحسين الذي سمحت نفسه بمهجته.
Peace be upon Al-Husayn, who sacrificed himself up to the last drops of the blood of his heart.
السلام على من أطاع الله في سره وعلانيته.
Peace be upon him who obeyed Allah secretly and openly.
السلام على من جعل الله الشفاء في تربته.
Peace be upon whom Allah placed a cure in the soul of his place of martyrdom.
السلام على من الإجابة تحت قبته.
Peace be upon the one under whose dome answer to supplications is guaranteed.
السلام على من الأئمة من ذريته.
Peace be upon the one in whose descendants are the Imams after him.
السلام على ابن خاتم الأنبياء. السلام على ابن سيد الأوصياء.
Peace be upon the son of the seal of the prophets. Peace be upon the son of the chief of the executors.
السلام على ابن فاطمة الزهراء. السلام على ابن خديجة الكبرى.
Peace be upon the son of Fatima, the radiant. Peace be upon the son of Khadija, the great.
السلام على ابن سدرة المنتهى. السلام على ابن جنة المأوى. السلام على ابن زمزم والصفا.
Peace be upon the son of the low tree in the outermost boundary of heaven. Peace be upon the son of the garden of refuge. Peace be upon the son of Zamzam and As-Safa.
السلام على المرمل بالدماء. السلام على المهتوك الخبا. السلام على خامس أصحاب أهل الكسا.
Peace be upon him who was saturated in his blood. Peace be upon him whose tents were violated. Peace be upon the fifth of the people of the cloak.
Oh.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبين استعين صلى الله عليك وعبد الله السلام عليك ورحمة الله وبركاته. This is an episode of the program The Dialect and I'm Dr. Fakhr Rouhani. As indicated earlier, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam gave several speeches and several talks on the day of Ashura for the enemy soldiers. When Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam understood that the enemy soldiers were short of appreciating the truth of his movement, then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam changed his mode of addressing them. He addressed them in a way that he rebuked them in order to awake them, in order to make them get to their senses. And then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated to them that what were the reasons for opposing him, for surrounding him. And then Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam approached them, addressed them in such a way that they had surrounded him, it was all because they enjoyed this worldly life quite excessively, and they had had haram food, haram meals. And all of these intentions, I mean, all of these unfavorable, religiously unfavorable practices influenced their intellect and made them blind to the beauty and nicety of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In fact, we find that in the speeches of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he made frequent references to satanic temptations and wanted to awake the enemy soldiers that the surrounding him meant nothing but obeying Satan. And then we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam indicated it to them that the illegitimate son of the illegitimate, that is, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, who was the governor of Kufa, had suppressed Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, had exerted a very, very heavy pressure on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam so as to make him accept the proposal to recognize Yazid. However, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam wasn't such a person to admit such kind of abasement. Then he answered them, I mean the enemy forces, and indicated that he was steadfast in his divine way. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. As-salamu alayka ya Aba
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Hussein today and always. عليك مني
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
جيروم هيوز بروسلز
سعيد بورزا لندن
راشا ساغلام اسطنبول
Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As part of Israel's months-long so-called Operation Break the Wave, Regime forces have arrested dozens of Palestinians during raids across the occupied West Bank since Sunday. This time, the regime intensified its arrest campaign in the cities of Jenin and Al-Khalil. Israeli military issued a statement saying those who were detained are terrorist suspects. The regime conducts night raids in response to a series of anti-Israel operations that led to the killing of 19 Israeli soldiers and settlers earlier this year.
Whatever the Israeli military names its operations, these raids by the Israeli forces as well as by the settlers are an open war against the Palestinian people. The raids are an attempt to break the Palestinians' will, to force them to abandon all forms of resistance and to stop fighting for their freedom.
The arrest campaign comes amid aggressive policies practiced by the Israeli prison authorities against thousands of Palestinian prisoners languishing behind Israeli bars. Cancer-stricken prisoner Nasser Abu Hamid, the leader of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades in Ramallah, is in a life-threatening health condition after he fell into a coma. The Palestinian Prisoner Society has warned Abu Hamid is fighting for his life as the Israeli prison service continues to refuse to provide him with necessary medical care. Abu Hamid has been in jail since 2002, serving a life sentence.
We call on all Palestinian groups to mobilize people and hold rallies to express their anger and rejection of the Israeli criminal policies that have led to the deaths of many of Palestinian prisoners. Nasser Abu Hamid is a national hero and a symbol for the Palestinian people. He is literally battling for his life due to his worsening health condition.
According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, 231 prisoners have died in Israeli jails since 1967.
So on the one hand, detention of Palestinians is on the rise, and on the other hand, torturing and denying prisoners basic human rights is also on the rise. Israel claims these policies are meant to mow the lawn, prevent any forms of resistance, but for Palestinians, these illegal policies are part of Tel Aviv's perpetual war against them. Mona Qandil, Occupy Ramallah.
Public expressions of grief for the death of the Queen by those who see the royals as a glamorous family contributing millions of dollars into the UK economy each year, for instance, in tourism revenues. But that sentiment seems to be changing with growing calls for Britain to become a republic. The reasons for that transformation vary, but one argument used on both sides of the divide is money, taxpayer money, more than $130 million of it, granted by the British government to the royal family, covering their official parties, travels, security, and upkeep of their palaces, funds that anti-monarchists say could be spent on more urgent matters.
So why, for a family that already has so many riches, why don't they pay for that? You know, why does that come out of the public pocket? Because especially in this time where we need public funds for the cost of living crisis. I mean, we've got so many underfunded public services here.
I don't think it sets a good precedent for the way, like, taxpayers' money is spent. Give it to the NHS.
The National Public Service is not the only area that needs help. There's the deepening cost of living crisis, driven by soaring energy costs and an economy on the brink of recession.
People are going to suffer fuel poverty over this winter, and that without intervention of a fairly drastic nature, people are going to have to decide whether to heat their homes or to eat. Now, this seems a total obscenity in a nation which is one of the G6.
The British monarchy has an estimated wealth of more than $90 billion and privileges not available to the rest of the public.
We have Prince Charles, who is about to inherit the world's wealthiest woman's entire portfolio without an inheritance tax. That is a loss of literally hundreds of millions to the exchequer.
The past few months have seen multiple public sector strikes, mostly over pay, to keep up with the soaring cost of living that's pushing millions of people into poverty. It remains to be seen if the House of Windsor will continue to live on the public dime, and if so, what will the public do about it? Saeed Pourreza, London.
After 1 year under the Taliban control, Afghanistan is on the brink of economic collapse. This is according to the latest update by the World Food Programme. The UN body says the economic crisis wiped out jobs, salaries, and livelihoods across Afghanistan, limiting people's purchasing power. The WFP has called on the international community to step up its efforts before winter to avert a humanitarian catastrophe.
Today, I came to the bazaar to buy some food. As I checked the prices and the money in my pocket, I couldn't afford a sack of rice. I'm sure others are facing the same situation. We call on the Taliban and the international community to take steps towards fixing Afghanistan's worsening economy.
Here on a Kabul street, Afghans sell household items to escape poverty and keep food on the plate. These people say it's a matter of survival for them. They are also concerned about their future.
We are just trying to survive in this difficult economic situation. We are forced to sell our belongings and household items to put bread on the table. Some are selling second-hand items to pay their debt and bills, since they have been unemployed for months. I don't know what I will do in the coming month to make ends meet.
The Taliban Deputy Economy Minister blamed the economic crisis on 2 decades of U.S. occupation and Washington's sanctions on the war-ravaged country.
Today's deteriorating economic situation in our country is a legacy of the U.S. invasion, because the U.S. never let Afghan national economic bodies grow or become self-sufficient. All the U.S. did was to keep Afghanistan a consumer country and dependent on U.S. aid. Likewise, after the withdrawal, the U.S. seized Afghanistan's assets and cut international funding. As a result, the U.S. is to blame for Afghanistan's fragile economy.
In the meantime, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs has announced that 25 million people in Afghanistan are living in poverty, and 19 million people are facing food insecurity. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres arrived in Pakistan to see climate-induced devastation from months of deadly record floods that have left 500,000 people living in tents under the open sky and have left nearly 1,400 deaths. During his visit, the UN chief and Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif discussed the latest situation in the country. The two focused on joint efforts to carry out relief, rescue, and rehabilitation at the international level to mitigate the sufferings of the flood-affected people. Later, the visiting UN chief also met Pakistan's Foreign Minister Bilawal Bhutto Zardari and assured him of every support possible. The UN Secretary General, who has launched a global appeal to raise $160 million in flood assistance for Pakistan, says Pakistan is one of the countries most affected by climate change in recent months.
Developed countries must step up and provide Pakistan and other countries on the front lines with the financial and technical resources they need to survive extreme weather events like these deadly floods.
Bhutto said that his government is trying its best to help people who had lost everything in floods, but international help would be required to overcome the catastrophe.
I cannot shelter 33 million families. I cannot provide the food and clothing for 35 million families. We don't have the infrastructure in place. And this is just the rescue and relief phase.
The UN chief will travel to areas most impacted by the climate catastrophe. He will interact with the displaced families and oversee the UN's humanitarian response and relief efforts for millions of affected people. As the floods continue to ravage Pakistan, UN agencies and several countries continue to send aid to flood-affected people in recent weeks. However, Pakistani authorities believe that more assistance is required to help millions of flood victims. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
We
The annual report from one of France's top NGOs revealed that poverty has already skyrocketed this year. And that's at what many say is only the beginning of years of inflation and recession provoked by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Secours Populaire found that the number of people who say they have known poverty has increased 9% in just the past year. That's the biggest increase in 30 years. This year, over 40% of France says they can't pay their transport, medical, energy, or childcare bills, or go on vacation, or even buy fruits and vegetables. It's the highest percentage they've ever recorded.
The poverty question in France is one that's been central, but the social safety net is running out. It's just going to get worse and worse for the poor people because they're not going to be able to afford this stuff, you know? And the French are not going to be able to subsidize these cost of living increases the way they did.
The steep increase in poverty comes after a decade of failed austerity policies and a deep devaluing of the euro currency. The government just announced they expect the next two economic quarters to produce a growth rate of 0.2% and then 0%. Many predict that the essentially recession-level economy will soon begin massive layoffs. That combination spells stagflation, and it's something for which liberal economics has no theoretical remedy. This adds to the feeling of unease, especially among the investor class and high finance.
France has a pretty good record of having a social safety net for those who are on bottom as far as health care is concerned and other basic necessities. But since Macron got elected, a lot of those things have changed because Macron has decided that he's going to attack that social safety net.
The report showed that a near universal 85% of France is worried for the future generations. That's also the highest percentage ever recorded. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
A rally has been held in the besieged Gaza Strip to show support for Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds against the growing Israeli aggressions. Protesters have chanted slogans against the Israeli regime and called for an end to the Israeli occupation. Tensions have soared in Al-Quds in recent weeks as extremist Israeli settlers backed by Israeli forces desecrated Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has warned the Israeli regime against committing violations in Al-Quds.
The Zionist enemy must understand that violating the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque will not be tolerated by the Palestinian people. Our people will defend Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque with all means. Al-Aqsa Mosque is a red line that must not be crossed.
People have come out to reiterate their adherence to resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against the Israeli attacks. Al-Quds is a holy region of significant importance for all Muslims around the world.
Palestinian resistance groups will defend Al-Quds and will always be a safety valve to protect our people. Armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine.
Palestinians stress that Al-Quds will always remain the capital of Palestine despite the U.S. and Israeli plots to change its status.
This protest is sending a strong message to the whole world that Gaza will not sit idly while Al-Quds is being desecrated. Al-Quds is the eternal capital of Palestine. We also want to condemn the daily killing of our people in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces and the construction of illegal settlements as well as home demolitions.
Since the Israeli occupation of Al-Quds in 1967, the city and Al-Aqsa Mosque have been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice. Palestinians in the blockaded coastal territory say that they will use all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Britain has a new monarch. King Charles III used his first address to the nation since taking the throne to pay tribute to his late mother.
Queen Elizabeth was a life well lived, a promise with destiny kept, and she is mourned most deeply in her passing. That promise of lifelong service I renew to you all today.
Earlier, the new king, alongside Queen Consort Camilla, met well-wishers gathered outside Buckingham Palace, paying their respects after the passing of Queen Elizabeth II on Thursday. Gun salutes, floral tributes, and flags flying at half-mast symbolized the country in the first phase of an official 12-day mourning period. Messages of condolences flooded in from world leaders, with domestic tributes being led in the House of Commons by the new Prime Minister, Liz Truss.
Today, we show the world that we do not fear what lies ahead. We send our deepest sympathy to all members of the royal family. We pay tribute to our late Queen, and we offer loyal service to our new King.
These are unprecedented times, and the parliamentarians will be getting used to saying God save the King instead of God save the Queen. But what will a monarchy under the stewardship of Charles III really look like? Charles's ascension to the throne comes following a seven-decade-long reign by the late monarch.
Lots of people who maybe were not great fans of the monarchy as an institution respected Queen Elizabeth II for her longevity, for her record. They forgot many of the things that she was also associated with, the end of empire, which is often very brutal in places like Kenya. But they gave her some respect, and you'll see that, I think, over the next 12 days. You'll see people prepared to give that respect to the Queen. I think it's going to be a very different story going down the road, and we should remember that the monarchy is very important to the British elite. The armed forces, the security services, judiciary, they swear loyalty not to Parliament, but to the monarchy.
Charles's new role as king comes at not just a tumultuous time for the throne, but for the country itself.
If he's going to be an effective king, he will have to speak to the nation in a way that brings people together. And that may involve him, and as Charles has known to do this in the past, be a very much more politically overly political monarch than some of his predecessors. He's made interventions on various issues, and I think he'll continue to do that going forward.
At home and abroad, there are questions about what Britain's new monarch's vision will be. Will the tentacles of the new reign bring forth a new dawn? Former subjects across the world will simply wait and see. Amina Taylor, London.
A shroud of terror has descended onto the streets of Leicester, with Muslim residents of the English town living in fear for their very safety. Racism, cricket hooliganism, and violent street assaults, all targeting Muslims of mostly Pakistani origin, has become commonplace in this once peaceful city. Amid the hate crime spike, Press TV was informed by concerned locals that the attacks appear to be conducted by Hindu thugs radicalized by foreign extremism.
At this stage, we cannot verify the political affiliations of the perpetrators. However, speaking to local Muslim residents, they've expressed major concerns that what might be inspiring this latest round of attacks could be Hindutva supremacism from India. The rise of anti-Muslim violence taking place over there could have a ripple effect affecting the Indian diaspora community, particularly here in the UK, which boasts a sizable British Indian community.
Hindutva has become a significant ideology inside India, seeking to establish Hindu hegemony over the country. Many of its advocates preach intolerance towards rival religious groups, especially Muslims, who've become a prime target of India's Hindu extremist rhetoric. Local activists informed us that they believe it's the same Hindutva hate which has caused the rise in Islamophobia here in Britain.
The Muslims and the Hindus in Leicester have been getting along for decades. We've not had no issues. It's these latest crowds of these young Hindutva ideology thugs, RSS, the BJP thugs. This mentality, they come with this mentality, they're trying to bring it down here, and they're very, very racist, and they're the ones who are causing the problems in the community.
This year, at least three severe attacks have occurred, with at least two victims being hospitalized. The media has so far only focused on a recent outpouring of anger by local Muslims, venting their frustrations via scuffles with the police on Monday night. But if the alleged problem of Hindu radicalism isn't dealt with soon, Muslim vigilantism may become the go-to option for some furious locals. Robert Carter, Leicester.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The New York judge overseeing a tax fraud case against the Trump Organization on Monday, 12th of September, rejected any effort to delay next month's trial, acknowledging concerns that the former president, Donald Trump's company, might be trying to stall the criminal case. The judge cautioned against delaying tactics and said, the trial will begin on 24th of October. Please stay with us for more details. ABC News has covered the story and has this to say. It's starting to look like the Trump Organization is trying to stall its upcoming criminal trial in New York until after the midterm elections, a judge said on Monday, 12th of September, during a pre-trial hearing. Former President Donald Trump's family real estate firm is scheduled to start trial on 24th of October for fraud and tax evasion. We are not delaying the start of the trial, Judge Juan Merchant said, on Monday, 12th of September. A prosecutor, Joshua Steinglass, had accused attorneys for the Trump Organization of gamesmanship by failing to disclose the names of expert witnesses the defense will call to testify, as required under the rules of discovery. The name of the game has been delay, Joshua Steinglass said. Defense attorney Susan Neschels said she was sandbagged by the accusation and explained that the defense's approach to the case had changed after last month's guilty plea by longtime Trump Organization chief financial officer Alan Weisselberg. Weisselberg pleaded guilty last month to all 15 counts in an indictment that accused him of failing to pay taxes on nearly $2 million in fringe benefits the Trump Organization allegedly paid him, off the books. As part of his plea deal, he agreed to testify against the Trump Organization in next month's trial. We are now restructuring our defense, Susan Neschel said. This is all a result of Mr. Weisselberg's pleading guilty. The case against the Trump Organization is dramatically strengthened by the guilty plea, Steinglass claimed. The judge gave the defense until next Monday to provide the names of the experts they would call to testify, what they would testify to, and how that testimony is relevant to the case. The judge also told the defense not to make arguments to the jury that imply the company was charged by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office merely because it is owned by the former president. No selective prosecution, Judge Merchant said, adding he would also preclude arguments at trial that suggest this is a novel prosecution. Those are not defenses, Judge Merchant said. I will have very little patience at trial. The trial is expected to last about a month. Alan Weisselberg's plea agreement contains no requirements for a longtime chief financial officer to cooperate in the criminal fraud case against Donald Trump himself, which is separate from the case against the Trump Organization.
Mm-hmm.
The Reuters news agency has also reported on the same story, but giving us more details. The New York judge overseeing a tax fraud case against the Trump Organization on Monday rejected any effort to delay the trial, acknowledging concerns that former President Donald Trump's company might be trying to stall the criminal case. At a pretrial hearing in a New York State court in Manhattan, Justice Juan Merchan warned against delaying tactics, even as a Trump Organization lawyer said the decision by longtime Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg to plead guilty changed how the defense will present its case. One of the accusations is the defense is trying to stall, Judge Juan Merchan said. It's starting to feel that way a little bit. I'm repeating, we are not delaying this trial. It's starting on 24th of October and we're going forward. Prosecutors charged Trump's company and Alan Weisselberg in July 2021 with scheming to defraud, tax fraud and falsifying business records for awarding off-the-book perks to senior executives. The Trump Organization, which manages golf clubs, hotels and other real estate around the world, has pleaded not guilty and faces possible fines and other penalties if convicted. Alan Weisselberg initially pleaded not guilty, but changed his plea on 18th of August and agreed to testify, though he is not cooperating with prosecutors' larger probe into Donald Trump himself. His plea agreement calls for a 5-month jail sentence. Judge Juan Merchan also said he will not let the Trump Organization argue to jurors that it was a victim of selective prosecution by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, now led by Democrat Alvin Bragg. Susan Neschels, a lawyer for the company, said Alan Weisselberg felt he was being targeted because of his ties to the Republican former president. I believe that he will say that he thinks he was targeted because of his association with Donald Trump and pleaded guilty in part from concerns that the targeting would continue and he would be unfairly punished, Neschels said. Susan Neschels also said Alan Weisselberg told prosecutors that no one other than himself and Trump Organization controller Jeffrey McConney, who was immune from prosecution, knew about the tax wrongdoing. He has no knowledge of former President Trump knowing anything about it or any of the other Trumps, Neschels said. Assistant District Attorney Joshua Steinglass disputed her characterization of Weisselberg's discussion with prosecutors. Nicholas Gravanti, a lawyer for Alan Weisselberg, declined to comment. Donald Trump has not been charged or accused of wrongdoing in this case. Outside of the courtroom, Susan Neschels took issue with any suggestion of a stall. The trial is expected to last about 4 weeks. I'm not stalling, Susan Neschels said. I'm ready for trial.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir Al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the lives and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shia dignitaries, scholars and ulama all across the world of Islam. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers, Sheikh Mahdavi from the Islamic Seminary of Qom and Dr. Fakhwani from the University of Qom. Dr. Fakhwani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Very welcome to the program. The teacher and Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about an outstanding figure who had a really outstanding work regarding Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. He is no one but Mirza Abul Mawli Kalbasi, the outstanding faqih, Shiite faqih, mainly from the house of Isfahan and the city of Isfahan. He was also buried in the city of Isfahan, and he's the author of the book, or better to say, a treatise on Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam with the topic and with the title Al-Istishfa'u Bit-Turbat al-Sharifat al-Husayniyah, which is really an interesting topic. We'll talk about it. Before getting to his book, let's be a little bit concerned with his life, Mirza Abul Mawli Kalbasi. Sheikh Mahdavi, give us some details, please.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Mirza Abul Mawli Kalbasi Isfahani is one of the great and outstanding ulama, although anonymous to most of the listeners and audience. Maybe we ourselves didn't hear his name much, but he is regarded as one of the great and outstanding ulama of the seminary of Isfahan. Almost for 40 years he was teaching over there, and above 80 treatises has been published in different fields of study, mainly in fiqh, usul, rijal, and also having shuruh and commentary on the main ad'iyah and ziyarat, namely ziyarat Ashura, ziyarat Jami Kabira. For our audiences to get to know about him more, we have to say that he is born in 1247, according to lunar calendar, almost 200 years ago in Isfahan. And for them to know about his position in the eyes of the ulama, I think all of them, they are familiar with the great personality of Ayatollah Burujerdi.
Yes.
In Iran, before the revolution, who passed away around 1340, according to his solar calendar. Ayatollah Burujerdi is saying that the meetings or the sessions in which he was delivering durus or dars or lessons, actually he is quoting Mirza Kalbasi.
Yes.
He is saying that his sessions are equal or like the sessions of Peyambar or the Prophet.
Okay.
Because of the spirituality that you can feel and experience when you sit at his presence. So it shows his great position. Although we have not heard about him and his personality and his works much, it shows that this is the shortcoming from our side, not from his personality, and how he was really sincere, not looking after fame and making fame after out of his works and his things. One of the great works today we are going to talk about shows that besides having such a knowledge, great knowledge in terms of usul and fiqh, he dedicates his life to talk about one of the critical and challenging issues regarding the topic of the Karbala, which is al-istishfa bit-turbat al-husayniyah.
Yes,
inshallah,
that's right.
Yes, today we are going to talk about it more and more.
Just look at the names of the students. You said Ayatollah Burujerdi, Agha Ziya Araghi, Muhammad Hussein Garavi Naini, you know, Hassan Ali Khodaki Isfahani, Rahim Arbab, Sayyid Mahmoud Marashi Najafi, the father of Ayatollah Sayyid Shahabuddin Marashi Najafi, Murtaza Taleghani, and so many other, you know, outstanding students, say that spiritually speaking, I mean, and ethically speaking, it was really high. And that's why we can see so many students from different fields of study benefited from his presence. Dr. Fakhwani, when we talk about Mirza Abul Mawli Kalbasi, and when we get to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, this book, Al-Istishfa' bi-Turbat al-Husayniyah, we can say, or the complete title is Al-Istishfa' bi-Turbat al-Sharifat al-Husayniyah, comes to the scene. Literally, we can translate it as being healed by the Turba of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Before getting to this book, and we can say his discussions and his elaboration on this topic, talk a little bit about the topic itself. I mean, Turbat al-Husayniyah, what is the significance of Turbat al-Husayniyah, and why so much emphasis has been put on the soil of Karbala, especially of the grave of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the beginning, it must be indicated that the case of the soil of Imam al-Hussein's burial place, that is his tomb, is really an exception in the whole world.
Yes.
It's an exception in the whole world in terms of its healing powers. We find that those people who are really practicing and believing pious Muslims and Shiis usually yearn to spend at least some moments by the burial place of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
Yes.
And in authentic and authoritative hadiths in Islamic literature, we find that it's strictly forbidden to eat, I mean to have, soil. Nobody is permitted to do so. However, there's one exception in the whole world, and that is the soil taken from the burial place of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
And it is not for the use of, for example, nutrition.
No,
it
no,
is for
no,
the
no,
barakah.
No, no, no.
Yes.
This is no. Yes. This is for the sake of, I mean, its healing power.
Yes.
Provided that the person who uses it believes in it, because I mean, it wouldn't benefit, I mean, those people who don't believe in Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, or it may not benefit those people who might disrespect it. Okay. Rather, for example, in our homes, when we keep Torbat al-Hussein, we are very much careful, okay,
yes,
to keep it, okay, in a safe and secure place and treat it very, I mean, respectfully. And at the same time, it must be indicated that the soil of Imam al-Hussein's burial place has some protective value because, for example, in the conduct of the 8th infallible Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam, when he wanted to, I mean, to guarantee a safe journey for a close companion, Imam al-Riza alayhi salam used to give the person, the traveler, just a little, I mean, amount of the soil of Imam al-Hussein's burial place.
That's right.
And it was, I mean, I mean, it guaranteed everything.
It's better to say that the body, the holy body of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, which is buried over there, has affected the soil in which he's buried.
Yes.
And because of his divine character and the divinity and the light, we can say the soil is also influenced over there. And this made the soil to be of
blessed,
influence.
Especially blessed.
And especially blessed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to the people who are after, for example, healing or the barakah of the soil. So if the body of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is blessed with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, its holiness can be transferred to the soul too.
Yes, let me say something.
Okay.
In the book Kamil al-Ziyarat, there's a piece of hadith from the 6th infallible Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. In it, he said in this way, "Mawdu' ghabr al-Hussein min dayyum dufna fi rawdatin min riyad al-Jannah." The burial place of Imam al-Hussein, since the day he was buried over there, has turned into a paradise garden or a garden among the paradise gardens. Okay,
yes.
It indicates that the place has been specially blessed, not consecrated, but specially blessed.
Yes.
Because of the sacred body of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam.
Also in Ziyarat al-Nahiyat al-Muqaddasa by Imam Mahdi, we have,
yes,
"O Hussein, peace be upon you, whose soil of tomb is the healing."
Yes.
Okay?
Yes, this has really the healing power.
Yes,
yes,
has a healing power. Okay. Sheikh Matavi, let's get to you, brother. We can say this is intangible for some of our dear listeners. What is still you are talking about the healing power of a piece of soil. Can you give us some other, for example, details regarding this topic that was compiled by Mirza Abul Mawliya Kalbasi in a book, you know, in a separate book, and it's really outstanding.
Regarding the point that you mentioned, that it might seem strange to our listeners how a yota of soil could have a kind of healing power. I think this is very good for them to know that healing power is something which is going to be granted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, no matter what is that substance or item, no matter if it is a piece of fabric, I mean the clothes of Prophet Yusuf, which is going to heal the eyesight of his father.
Yeah, this is mentioned in the Quran.
Yes.
Yes.
Or it is going to be put in a piece of wood, which is a tabut, actually yes. The cradle of Prophet Musa. As we see, its power has been mentioned in the Quran, how it's going to bring tranquility for yes. the Bani Israel. So we see such powers could be given or could be put into whatsoever item that Allah wishes. So a yota of a soil or a piece of a soil could be taken as that item as well. That's why we see in the narrations of the Imams that thing has been mentioned, that this healing power has been put in the soil of the grave or the yes. area around the grave of Imam Hussein, that this is actually one of the subtopics that Allama Kalbasi is going to yes. talk about in his That's book. Right. When we go to the content, to the table of the content, we see one of the things he talks about after giving some points regarding the ban of taking clay or yes. soil. And then he talks about the area in which if you take that soil, it is going to be regarded the healing soil. Because we know that place that Imam Hussein has been buried is not the same place today people are going for the pilgrimage. It is actually regarded almost 10 meters below.
Is it, Dr. Farhouhani? The place that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the exact gravesite, is very much lower than the chamber people yes. are visiting, is it?
Yes, yes.
How meter is it? I mean, yeah, I mean, how long? 10 meters? 20 meters?
Yes, around 10 meters.
10
I
meters
had, yes.
lower, okay?
Yes.
And that is the exact burial place of Imam
yes,
al-Hussein
exactly,
al yes. okay?
Yes.
And the people are not allowed to visit over there?
No, no. Never.
Okay.
Have only you, special people, no.
Special people.
Only special okay. people for on certain missions.
On certain missions.
Yes, there are. Right. Directed there.
Okay.
Yes.
So
okay.
that's why he's talking about this topic, that uh-huh. which place is regarded Harim al-Qabr, or the place in which if you take oh. a dust from, that's going to be healing,
mm-hmm.
or it will have that healing power. And then he talks about the conditions that
yes.
must be met in order to get that healing power, and then Sharaat al-Istishfa and the rest. I mean, the rest of the topics that he's going to talk about, and even different functions of this torba that have been narrated or have been mentioned in the narrations and sayings of the Imam. It is not only for the sick to get and then get cured. Even they are saying that the moment of the delivering the child, the first thing
yes, yes,
first
yes, yes.
he has to take is part of the torba. The moment of burial, when they are going to put the dead corpse of
yes.
the person into the grave.
Yes.
All those detailed
yes,
points
yes.
that today we are not going to talk about.
Okay.
So that is a kind of comprehensive book regarding the healing power of the soil of Imam Hussein, actually
mm-hmm.
the grave
the
of
grave.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam,
yes.
and its different functions besides that.
One of which is, for example, the torba that the Shias, for example, put on the foreheads when doing salat, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
As a sample, of course, the torba. This torba might not be the original one, but this is as a, we can say, the sign of respect.
Yeah.
For Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam, and showing that when your forehead on the dust, you are submissive to Allah Subhanahu wa Taala in the total respect and being as a true servant. Okay, Dr. Farhouhani, anything missed about the torba of Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam? Any story? Any important event or any, for example, because really this is an interesting topic. Usually the public ask about, for example, the sharaat, the conditions in which the torba might be consumed, or what are the etiquettes, in fact, how to respect this torba.
Yes, it must be indicated that in Shia Husseini literature, there are some conditions for the use of Torbat al-Hussein, the soil of Imam al-Hussein's burial place. However, and in addition to what's already been covered here, I should like to point out to something else. In India, I mean, to my experience in India, there are some places in some cities in India which are called Karbala. For example, there's a place in New Delhi which is called Karbala. Also, the same Karbala can be found in Hyderabad.
Okay. And what is it?
But yes, the significance?
Okay? Yes.
Pious Muslims and pious Shias, and some of them, for example, in the case of New Delhi, I heard that the man who gave his personal piece of land to a place to be called Karbala was an Indian, was a Hindu.
Yes.
And when he found out that his son was going to die because of an unknown illness or perhaps cancer, someone suggested him to make use of just a small iota of, Turbat al-Hussein. And his son, was healed, was recovered. In effect of this, this Hindu became Shia and devoted a large piece of land of his property to Karbala Ali Ganj. But, and he himself changed his name from a Hindu name into Ali.
Okay.
And the place is known as Karbala Ali Ganj.
Okay.
Ali Ganj Karbala.
Yes, very
but
good.
Moreover, in order to add a blessing to the same piece of land, he imported just some small pieces of soil from Karbala and spread the dust of Karbala over the whole region. The same was done in Hyderabad.
Okay? Very beautiful.
So we find that places in not located in Shia heartlands, so some pieces of lands carry the name Karbala because of
are
having received some soils from Karbala.
And they are blessed.
Yes, they are blessed. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
But a Shia child is born, we can't say his mouse is blessed with the soil of Karbala, the land is blessed.
Yes.
That's all right. The tasbih, the rosaries are blessed, with the soil of Karbala. And we say this is not simple. It needs a believer. It needs, for example, some different conditions to consume and to be effective. Really, really interesting topic. We can't say which was tackled by Mirza Abul Mawaliya Kalbasi in his book Al Istishwa. But Turbat al-Sharifat al-Husayniya, really outstanding work. Thank you much, Dr. Fakhwani.
Welcome.
And Sheikh Mahdavi for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. About Sheikh Mirza Abul Mawaliya Kalbasi, Safar 27th, 1315, he passed away at the age of 67 in the city of Isfahan, and he was buried, around the Taht-e-Fulat Cemetery, which is the burial place of so many outstanding Muslim scholars in the city of Isfahan. And today, Takiyeh Kalbasi, which is the burial place of so many members of this family, is over there with the domes, with the brick domes over there in the Taht-e-Fulat Cemetery in the city of Isfahan. May Allah bless the soul of Mirza Abul Mawaliya Kalbasi, the author of Al-Istishfa wa Turbat al-Sharifat al-Husayniya. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Khan of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.